Well, hey everyone, my name is Becky Eikema, and I'm so glad you are here for another episode of Darling, Confessions of a Former Megachurch Singer. I'm glad you're here because we are diving into a fantastic conversation on leadership. We are interviewing today Brenna Rubio and Bill White, who are both co-pastors, and they also started a phenomenal coaching group called Small Church Big Table. I got to know these two when I attended one of their workshops at a collective event this past fall, which we'll get into a little bit. But the title of it caught my eye, and just like a warning, we don't use curse words, but the subject of it was, how do you lead without being an a-hole? Okay. How do you lead without being a jerk? And that's something that I myself witnessed a fair amount in ministry, not always. But there were moments where I go, man, why is this leader, this pastor who I am being supervised by, the one who is both leading us spiritually as a staff, as a church, why is this person either narcissistic or verbally abusive or being coercive or utilizing emotional manipulation and things that just felt so yucky? And those are my words, okay? And that's my story. I don't know if anyone listening can relate to that, but when I attended this workshop, there were a lot of people in the room. And it's because this is something that we see over and over and over. And one of the paradigm shifts that I believe is going to be integral in making our churches healthier for the next generations is by addressing toxic leadership. And sometimes toxic leadership can also be passive leadership. There are different modes, and Brenna and Bill talk about this a little bit. I'm really eager for you to get to know these two, and if at all their coaching or grabbing a call with them or doing some one-on-ones would be helpful to you or a church leader that you know that's very influential, please pass along this conversation. I believe so much in the work that Brenna and Bill are doing. They are just phenomenal people who love Jesus and are committed to finding a third way in leading teams healthily and productively. So without further ado, my conversation with Brenna and Bill. Today, I am joined by Brenna Rubio and Bill White, who are both co-pastors at City Church of Long Beach, and they are also the co-founders of Small Church Big Table, which is just a phenomenal group. They have coaching cohorts, and I got to meet you all at the Post Evangelical Collective event in Denver this fall and was just so moved by your content. Welcome. We're so glad you're here.
Thank you so much for having us here.
We are glad to be here. So I want to hear how you describe the title of the seminar you went to at the Post-Evangelical Collective. And when you
Well, I don't have the official title in front of me, but it's kind of like, how do you lead without being an a-hole?
That's actually it. You nailed
it. That was it.
Okay.
The first few people who came in, they were kind of looking at the door, and I was like, I was a little like, I'm like, is the title a little scary? And 100% anybody asked that was like, no, that's why I came. I wanted to talk about the a-hole church culture.
Yes. How to not be a jerk when you're a leader. And it's fascinating. I think so many of us who have worked in church world for a long time, we have experienced the jerk leadership, but we've never been told that there are other ways to lead or other types of healthy, productive cultures to be a part of. And if anybody's listening and they're not a part of the church culture, they might be going like, what? You mean everybody's not like friendly and peaceful and in harmony? No.
Like if you're fresh and new, or, you know, you're part of it from like the pew side, but you've never been in a board meeting or a staff meeting, you might have some really, I mean, I remember my first time in ministry, you know, fresh out of college, and I had all sorts of idealistic ideas, but what was going to be like to work with a bunch of people who love Jesus? Surely it's going to be awesome. Right?
Oh,
all
always.
Hearts and flowers. Rainbows everywhere, you know?
Yeah, totally. Right, Bill? Is that your experience?
More
rainbows
like,
and unicorns?
A lot of lightning bolts. I was shocked. I was so demoralized because I realized very early on, I had this awesome mentor. I was on staff with InterVarsity, and he pointed out like what a jerk I was. I would show up at these meetings and I'd be like, don't be a jerk today. And I was the jerk. every time we would have these staff meetings, I'm like, I couldn't help myself.
Huh.
Oh, it was awful.
Bill, but what a gift, right? That like in your first ministry situation, someone cared enough about your character. Mm-hmm. To talk with you about it and to, you know, suggest mm-hmm. there might be a different way. I mean, I also started in ministry through parachurch. And in my experience, there's just a lot more training that happens in the parachurch world versus the people who go straight into seminary, straight huh. into the pastorate. And I guess it depends on which programs you go through, but so many of them, leadership skills, people skills, the soft skills, those are not the focus of, you know, a pastoral training program. Greek yeah. and Hebrew are, and you use those quite a bit less.
Yeah, 100%. When I went to seminary, I went to Indiana Wesleyan, and for my MDiv, it was fascinating. The languages, Greek and Hebrew, were actually, they were electives that you did not have to take.
But no we way.
Yeah. And so I had wanted to take it long ago, but at this point I was a mom and working a full-time position and also getting my master's of divinity. And it was just way, way too much. So I said no to the language, but yes to the class about leadership and a pastoral counseling class. And those mm-hmm. classes were so invaluable in like the business of people that is yes. ministry.
Yes. I mean, that's what we do so mm-hmm. much of our time. I mean, I guess if you're at a really large church and yeah. you spend 30 hours of your week prepping a sermon, maybe it's a little bit different for you. But for so many of us, the time that we spend developing leaders, working with staff, working with our board, just yeah. doing the pastoral work, that's so much more.
I took 3 classes on Greek and 2 in Hebrew and 0 on how not to be a jerk. And it was really obvious.
Oh, it's amazing. But you knew that Bible.
Gosh. And I weaponized that thing. Mm. I still do. God have mercy on me. It's still in me.
Man, that's crazy. Yeah, it's so hard to get that out of us. I remember when my eyes, like the veil started coming off of my eyes and I realized the hypocrisy in myself and the self-righteousness. There's so many moments where I just say to myself, oh, I'm being righteous. I'm have all the answers. Like, No. Got to meet people with love and mercy and grace and hold space. Well, why don't you all tell us a little bit about kind of what your journey has been into this work with Small Church, Big Table? What led you into going, hey, there's something here. There's a message, there's content that we really want to make available for church leaders and ministry leaders.
Yeah, you know, a first thing that we often have to tell people pretty explicitly, because if they don't, they make all sorts of assumptions, is that I always have to introduce myself and say what I'm doing, say, well, I'm a co-pastor with my friend, Bill White.
Yes.
Because they say, oh, Bill and I are co-pastors. In our particular context, most people, if they know co-pastors, especially who are a man and a woman, of course, they're married. And Bill and I are not. We started our ministry journeys very differently, and it's been just a journey even getting to know each other, becoming partners in the way that we are in our church setting and now a Small Church, Big Table.
Yeah.
I think leaning into this new thing, kind of talking about power issues in the church, when we started City Church of Long Beach, we started with co-pastors. And it was a new model. You know, I'd been a part of a lot of ministry teams and different churches, and it was pretty much always top down. Mm-hmm. It was that was just the structure. The person at the top made the decision. In fact, when we were considering planting, one of the key coaches in our planting said, "You cannot be co-pastors. It will not work. It's not biblical." I'm like, I could have sworn Jesus sent him out 2 by 2. But, you know, but literally said, you cannot do that. It's not biblical. You need to have someone who will always make the final decision.
I real quick to interject, that was one of the arguments in my complementarian church when I was engaged to my husband. We both were like, hey, low key, we're both egalitarian and we're going to have a mutual marriage. But the pushback I got from elders was, when the buck stops somewhere in a conversation, who's going to make the decision? And I'll tell you, 14 years into our marriage so far, we've never reached that when the buck stops here, who's going to make the decision moment. Anyway, right? continue.
Yes. So many people, well, just, I mean, I was about to say the same thing. So many couples I know who functionally have an egalitarian marriage still hold on to that, you know, when the buck stops here kind of mentality and yet never reach it. And yeah, it is the same argument. And I will also say, because of that, all the principles that we talk about leadership wise, often people sitting in our webinars are going, ooh, that applies to my marriage.
Ah,
they could picture how that kind of perspective on sharing power could be helpful.
Love it. I love it. Okay. Sorry, Bill, we interrupted.
Oh, no. So we started City Church of Long Beach as co-pastors. Brenna Rubio was not part of the team at that point.
Yeah, this was Bill and his co-pastor, Jason.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Who's a good friend of mine. And when Jason moved back to Iowa with his family to raise his kids with the extended family, I got to pastor solo. It's sort of a dream of mine in my younger years to finally be the man. And I sucked at it. I was so bad. I dreamt of this, but I had no idea how to develop staff, how to handle conflict, how to move towards vision, how to have healthy boundaries and all these things. And I just literally blew up the church. I just wrecked it. Mm-hmm. And that was for a year. We literally barely survived. I cut our church in more than half that year. Mm. And then Brenna Rubio came along and she's so gracious. She's so kind and so stinking smart. She's like, no, there might be a better way to do this. I'm like, tell me, please.
Well, so I had actually been part of that year. I joined the staff team as Jason and his family moved. I'd been part of City Church just in a really kind of a healing season. I'd had a few rough years of ministry. And yeah, so I was kind of in a healing, restocking phase. And then I was invited to join the staff team. And I loved City Church of Long Beach. There's so much about it. So I was just thrilled. I was thrilled to join this team. And we see this swing that City Church experienced, that Bill experienced, I experienced during that year. It's so common because you do go from these places where what you've experienced is so hierarchical and narcissism is so pervasive in the church. And it's just soul crushing that I think it's just kind of natural to say, hey, we're going to do it completely differently. And so if having one person in charge and making all the decisions is so toxic, we're just going to go the complete opposite. And it's always just going to be showing up and saying, okay, what should we talk about? What should we do? Who wants to do what? Like just very wheels off. I mean, chaotic is.
And that was my leadership. She was describing my leadership that year. It wasn't that I was a top down, like crazy, mean leader. It's I was like, so what, where do we think we should talk about this week?
So
I had
it would
no
swing.
Leadership. Yes,
it would swing
I did.
For you.
Well, it was a big swing. Sorry. So in that season, we were living in the chaos kind of area, you know, having been so long in the sort of over-controlling, toxic, narcissistic sort of place. This was, you know, camping out for a while in this more chaotic, because surely this has to, since the one thing didn't work, you know, the very hierarchical model, then surely this very mutual model is going to be so much better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, honestly, I was kind of like, well, one, I had a lot of respect for Bill and I still do. I think Bill White, he's just a pastor through and through. He's a shepherd. I tell people he smells like Jesus. For me, that's the highest compliment I can pay someone. It's just like, you smell like Jesus, you know, like that there's just this kind of this humility and this willing to walk the walk. So I think I just wanted to try. And I was kind of like, yeah, I've been in those narcissistic systems too. So let's see how this works. It was just over time is going, no, this isn't working. Mm-hmm. And I had the gift that not every ministry leader has had of having been in some really healthy teams before where
that sounds amazing,
right? Like not many people have had that experience where leadership was shared in all sorts of healthy ways.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of over time going, I think we could give a little bit more structure. Mm-hmm. I think we could, you know, we could establish some more rhythms. I think there's maybe a way to do both where it would be healthier because I've seen it done before. And so I think there might be something beyond just this swing between one of these two options.
Yeah. And for me, the key was Brenna really helped us to think through how do you make decisions?
Yeah.
Whose decision is it? Mm-hmm. What kind of decision? Is this a solo decision? Is this a team decision? What kind, there are different kinds of consensus. What kinds of consensus? What are the necessary conversations before a decision gets made? And to bring clarity to these issues was so helpful. And I realized, okay, so power is neutral, right? What's the quote that you often...
We use the MLK quote to talk about power being the capacity to get things done, that's like Martin Luther King Jr.'s definition of power. And so, I mean, that is, it's a value neutral, morally neutral statement. Power is effectiveness. Can you get something done? But then the question is, how are you holding that power? And to what ends, right? It's how we use the power. And then Brené Brown, we always point to, for any leader who hasn't seen this before, it's an easy Google. Maybe it could be put in the podcast notes, but Brené Brown on Power With is just, it's this fabulous one-page PDF that will just give you such insight into thinking like, okay, why am I holding power and how am I holding it? Am I holding it with others for their sake? Or am I doing it in a hierarchical top-down way where it's power over others and I'm trading on fear and I'm operating in strategies of control? Those are really different things.
Well, and that makes me think often we equate the words power to equal control. Power means control, but they are two separate things.
They are. Yeah. So to think, okay, well, what we're doing in the chaotic system, like we had moved to at City Church Long Beach, and we see all sorts of churches around us where if we're trying to do something new, often that's part of it, thinking, okay, how would we do leadership differently? That there's a sense of, well, I'm scared of power because I've only seen it used in that controlling way. So I'm going to kind of put my hands up and say, like, I don't want to touch it. I don't want to touch the power. Instead of saying, no, how could I hold power differently? How could I use power? How could I make sure I'm sharing it? And so thinking of leadership starts to become about how do I give power away and how do I empower others and build structures that help support that.
And that takes vulnerability too, right? Because you have to be willing to open your hands and give up a little bit of your control to invite more people into it. Sorry, Bill, you were going to say something.
No, I was just going to say that we work with pastors who will say, well, I can't just change my leadership structure to be co-pastors. And we say, well, great, fine, be whatever structure you're in. There's still ways to have a mutual leadership structure. There's still ways to share power and to do it really well and to get great clarity over what are the decisions that you individually make versus you and your elder board make versus you and your staff make versus congregation. And there's so many ways to do this that are healthy. We've been sold a bill of goods, this very simple idea that, well, I'm the head pastor, so I have to make all the decisions. Right. That's just a pile of hooey.
Yeah.
You don't know all the things. You know, you don't have all the expertise and you certainly don't have all the time and energy.
Well, and the skills too. It's God has given different people different skills. I just finished over Christmas break rereading the book by Larry Osborne. It's called Sticky Teams. And he gets into the specifics of like getting really clear, distilling down what are the gifts of your lead pastor or your lead co-pastors? What do you need a board for? What ought a board maybe just not even have its hands in, whatever. But there's also in that, like you were saying, Bill, there's diversity, there's breadth. There's ability to make this what best serves your context, but knowing the people and getting really clear, like you were saying earlier too, how you and Brenna both together decided what are things that we need to decide together? What are different things that we can each kind of make decisions on? Gosh, clarity is key and it's kind. Right. Yes. That's Brené Brown. She says, clear is kind. I quote that like every single day, because the more clear we can be, it sets expectations for people.
Yeah. Yeah. For us, one of the sort of goofy ways that we started working with each other in developing some clarity, because you don't want to feel like you have no areas where you get to make decisions. I mean, that's part of that chaos system, right? Where like you feel like you have no area that's yours to make decision because everything is the group. And so you just get stuck. I mean, the majority of people I know who are on teams that are in that chaotic phase, and certainly what we experienced, you feel all sorts of yucky things there too, just confused, demoralized. We never get things done, ineffective. Mm-hmm. What are we even doing? It's often very kind and very nurturing. Right. But there is actually like most of us, we get into ministry because we want to help people. Like we actually want to do some good stuff in the world. So one of the goofy little tools that we started using was asking who's Batman in a particular situation, because you know, Batman and Robin are that like kind of iconic duo. Yeah. Every once in a while, people come back and say, oh, could we get something a little less gender specific? And we're kind of like, well, I mean, it's Robin, right? Like, but that's fine. People can come up with other things, but to say who's Batman and who's Robin, like just to name, like in this particular area, not because they're on an ego trip, but because, hey, they're the one with the time. They're the one with the talent, the skill, the ability or the contacts. I'll take Batman for this one. And I'll still check in with my Robin appropriately, but it was just so helpful. And so we've seen so many churches start to use that language because it's a little goofy and that actually makes it easier to use, you know, to kind of say, wait, so do we have a Batman? And then for that Batman to feel like, oh man, I actually get to like, I know I'm empowered. I know this is my responsibility. That's actually, it feels good.
Ooh, that I like that a lot. And then who's Batman's, who's his friend who makes all of his,
Alfred?
Alfred.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it. So then he's also got a team of an Alfred. He's got the people. Yeah. Who's going to be the lead in which moment? And I love that. That's great.
Yeah. I was just going to say, it's a shorthand of a larger tool we use called the leadership funnel that helps us kind of determine the four main ways. And the Batman is kind of one of the key places that we use shorthand to help that. Mm-hmm. Because it's just, I mean, you just need some common language and some common tools around authority, leadership, power, delegation, decision-making in order for you to have a healthy culture.
I remember in one conversation with a lead pastor, he was talking about, we were just talking about developing people and having a developmental kind of mind frame. And he shared that for him, you know, that was difficult because the way he felt, there were some jobs where it's like, I'm hiring you to push a button. And I just don't know what to say other than that. Mm. And my honest first was just like, nobody in your church should be hired to push a button. Like if we even come into it with that mentality, we're missing something, right? Mm. Because there should be something more. Like we have to have a developmental perspective where this person has Batman on a particular area. And this person actually knows when to push the button and when not to. And if there's like something weird happens, you know, that you actually trust them to take care of what happened. You know, it was just it was an illustration of that top-down model we might not even realize that we have. If we're looking at anybody as just a button pusher, as always the Robin, it should be a good sign to us, you know, that we're missing a little something about what leadership is supposed to mean.
Yeah.
Pastoral leadership.
Oh yeah. Well, that's so often we are swimming in waters that we don't even know we're swimming in. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, I've learned like, oh, I have swum in the waters of codependency my entire life. Yes. You have other leaders who are saying, oh, I'm swimming in like narcissism and I don't even realize that I am one, or needing to be the dominant, the alpha. Yeah. To not even see that, oh, it might actually be a benefit to my team if I empower my button pusher and give him or her leadership over something where they can go like rise up and dream and grow. Something you can give away, surely.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Anyone listening that you're like, oh, wait, that's how I think, you know, that if that triggered for you, like I do tend to think some people are just button pushers.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think you're a bad person. I think this was probably what was modeled to you. This was what was taught to you. You know, this particular pastor, he was kind of owning it for himself as he was sharing the story. And later on, he was talking about how this very well-renowned pastoral leader had given him some direct advice back when he was in his 20s and told him that his job was to be a benevolent narcissist. That was his job.
Oy.
And probably this particular pastor is still out there telling people that their job is to be a benevolent dictator. Did I say narcissist or dictator? Anyway,
you said narcissist.
Sorry. Yes. But, we'll rewind.
But
a benevolent dictator. They're sort of similar. There's some overlap.
Yeah. Totally. And I've heard that phrase. That's right. The benevolent dictator. Yep. And that's when we're given that type of advice, or when we've seen that modeled, especially in formative years, from somebody that we respect, we put that coat on and we go, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do. And I love that you all are pushing this conversation and encouraging folks to look broader and get more imaginative and creative with it.
The benevolent dictator is the only model of leadership that I witnessed in so many evangelical parachurch and church settings. It is the primary model.
Yeah, me too.
And it's not healthy. It leads to really toxic culture.
Yeah. Yeah. So to that, what are you all seeing as some common like leadership concerns or troubles these days in leaders? And this clearly is one of those, but yeah, what are you seeing?
Well, I think one of the other models that's out there that's connected is the CEO model. So it's the CEO pastor.
I lived in that.
Yeah. And with that, I'm trying to decide if this phrase sounds too snarky. I don't mean it to be snarky necessarily, but I think when you're in it, it feels normal, just the evangelical machinery all around us. So sometimes Bill and I will talk about the evangelical industrial machine, but it's this circuit, right, of speakers and books and conferences. And what we often see in that is that there's this, you get this idea that bigger is always better. So if the pastor is the CEO, then the pastor's goal is always growth, which means numerical growth. It means butts in seats. It means your budget. It means all these things, right? And that's a lot of pressure, one, on a pastor. That when you combine that with this picture of leadership that is already so hierarchical, it creates a machine type of working environment, ministry environment for all the staff people and the board and even the volunteers who are getting involved, your average church member, where we start using people. And there's a real difference between inviting people in to a dynamic, potent community and using people to boost our budget and increase our numbers. But again, it actually starts with quite a bit of pressure on the pastors to perform that way, to think that that's what healthy ministry looks like.
Well said. Yeah.
I feel like I run into a lot of pastors who are asking how to leave well or how to get out, how to, particularly some lead pastors who are curious about how to lead differently, knowing that their board probably doesn't want them to or won't accept that. But a lot of folks who are not lead pastors saying, I am in a toxic setting. What do I do? A lot of that.
Well, we've seen the great resignation, and it has certainly hit the church world. And I've seen that in my work in search and helping worship leaders find jobs and churches with openings find worship leaders. And yeah, the level of toxic culture, and also I think folks having little to no margin to either function, stay within it, or to help change it. We're just seeing folks quit left and right because they're either fed up with it and they're hopeless around how we can make things different. And that's why what you all are doing matters so much. So I would love to kind of pivot here and talk a little bit more about your coaching, your cohorts, what you all are offering through your nonprofit work. Yeah. Talk to us a little bit so our audience can hear what you all provide.
Yeah, mostly we have been working with bringing cohorts together. So leaders, we often try to put people into some cohorts that make a little more sense for them. You know, so church planters we can put together, lead pastors who've been in the ministry for 30, 40 years who are responding more to kind of some of the rumbles around them versus pastors or staff who are part of a church team and experiencing stress from that sort of not being the leader or one of the leaders in a church.
Yeah.
And just trying to create some honest conversation and give some language to alternatives to say, okay, you've experienced this and it's hard. And maybe you wonder about this. We've actually done that. We wouldn't recommend that.
Been there. We're going to save you from that. Yeah.
Totally understand why that sounds appealing. Yeah. What if we tried what if we tried this? One pastor who came to our seminar, he's a friend of ours, just delightful human being. He admitted at the end, he was a little worried coming in. I mean, he knew us, he trusted us, but he was just a little worried it was going to be too simplistic, you know, just kind of like easy answers, slap some band-aids on the problem. But what he experienced, and we were so glad, because I think this is our hope, was that instead, what we were trying to do was give some conversational tools to say, like, you're going to have a lot of conversations. This is going to be an ongoing process, but could we give you some gateways into the conversation, some easier ways to get them started and keep them going, some practices and some patterns so that you can figure out in your own setting what this looks like? So really, we just have 4 weeks, you know, worth of coming together and talking. But in those 4 weeks, we often see people start to develop a fair amount of hope and energy, because there's always homework to go and actually try this out with someone this week. Try to get into a conversation with someone.
Yeah.
Great.
And it always looks different. Yeah. Right? I mean, I think that's what Brenna was just saying. It looks different. So I had a phone meeting this morning with a pastor who's on a staff pastor who's been trying to leave his church for 2 years. And in his situation, we had a lot of conversations about get your house in order. How are you going to cover medical insurance? How are you going to cover putting food on the table for the kids? These sorts of things. But, you know, like, hey, let's not send that email right now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm glad you wrote it. That sounds very therapeutic. And I'm glad you sent it to me instead of your head pastor. You know, but like, you know, but how do you transition well? And he's doing a great job, but it's taken him 2 years.
Yeah.
If you're planting a church, that's a different conversation. If you're planting from a church planting network that demands a certain kind of culture, and you realize, okay, this is what's going to destroy us. So how, you know, do you transition networks? How do you work with your launch team? There are a lot of key questions. And really, it is exactly what Brenna said. It's, let's equip ourselves with some patterns, some tools, so that we have better conversations to get to more clarity, because there's not going to be a one size fits all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's not just a prepackaged material, but man, and cohorts too are so powerful. I mean, coaching, one-on-one coaching is phenomenal if that's a great option for somebody, but cohorts too, being able to engage with other leaders. First of all, you're growing your network, you are growing your community. It is actually living out that small church, big table. There's a big table. There's room for everybody here.
Yeah. One of my favorite cohort times, I was in a smaller group with these three leaders who were all nonprofit leaders. So they actually weren't pastors. A couple of them work in some major medical missions. Another does work in nonprofit education world, but they're all, you know, people who want their leadership to smell like Jesus. You know, they wanted to be Jesus shaped. And so they wanted to go through the material as well. And so this wonderful woman, female leader, she was explaining a sort of a case study, you know, going through an issue and a conflict she was having with a male who was, she was his supervisor. And so two women in this group other than myself, and then one man. And so, of course, I opened it up to others for like, hey, any questions, you know, that you want to ask, or, you know, maybe something that struck you. And this man just looks at her and says, he asked you that? I think there's a little something going on in terms of like, has he had a woman leader before? You know, just so having a man who was able to name that the amount of pushback she was receiving from this male subordinate, to use, I think it's kind of outdated language. I haven't totally figured out what to use instead. But this man that she was supervising, him being able to name and say, this isn't appropriate. That's not, I would never get that amount of pushback from a man on my staff. This isn't you. He's trying to make it sound like it's you and your leadership style. I couldn't have said that. I mean, having the cohort where someone else doing the same kind of work could speak in, it was really, really precious.
Man, that's powerful. Oh, that's so good. And in our conversation together at the collective, my eyes were just so open to, one, the commonality that so many people have experienced bad leadership, toxic leadership. And we've had different experiences, but there's enough commonality in that room. And as you all were leading us through this exercise of the matrix of different types of leadership cultures, my eyes were open for the first time after, you know, 17, 18 years of ministry going, oh, wait, there's a way. There's actually a way to do this healthily. It's so powerful. And yeah, there's power in coaching cohorts. There's power in the one-on-one. And just from your experience, I just think that the questions you're asking alongside the experience both of you have had and the way that you're living out your co-pastoral leadership, it just is such a huge gift right now to leaders. Yeah. Any final thoughts that you kind of want to share with the group? And I would kind of want to know too, if there's a team member who they think they're working in an unhealthy leadership culture, but they want to shift it, like, where do they even begin? Is there kind of an initial like step or question that they ought to put out? Where do they start?
I think we find there are a couple of types of people that we end up working with. One is the leader who says, oh my God, it's me. I'm the problem. A lot of them look like me. a lot of white guys, right, in their 40s and 50s who are realizing, oh my, it's like I'm the what do I do? And then there are a whole host of folks who are like, I've been part of this system and I'm getting worked over. And sure, they're realizing I've got some issues myself, of course, but that's not the primary factor there. So both of them are key journeys. And so I'll let Brenna speak to your specific question here.
Yeah. So for people who then would really probably be more in the second group that Bill was talking about, right? Like, I've been part of these systems. It's been painful. I've been worked over. Maybe I'm still there. Usually the people are still there. And the first thing is that I hope that person has some safe places to talk. Yes. Because what we see so often is that people just don't, that maybe all your good friendships are in the church. And so you don't know who it's safe to tell that you have questions, you have doubts, you're getting tired, you're getting burnt out. You're not sure. I mean, if it's a toxic system, you may have received all sorts of messages of guilt, you know, of shame that you're even experiencing any of those things. Yeah. And so whatever it takes to find a safe space in many areas, you know, there might be a pastor's group, you know, something. We have some therapy groups around us where they host groups that pastors can come to just for refreshment and support, moderated by a trained counselor. You know, that could be a great starting place. Just finding some networks where you can really come and ask your questions. And then to me, the second step is just saying, okay, where do you have influence of your own that you could try to lead differently? But there are going to be some meetings where you don't have control. You know, you're not the one who sets the tone of the meeting, who creates, you know, kind of the rules for engagement, but there probably, maybe it's a group of volunteers, you know, maybe it's a small group. Where do you have some authority, good, healthy authority that you could start to experiment and say, this is the kind of leader I want to be, and grow some confidence and just start to reaffirm that part of yourself that knows it can be different. Those are my two first things I would say.
Yeah.
Bill, what would you add?
I would say, talk to Brenna Rubio.
Always.
But that's what I usually say.
What would Brenna do?
What would Brenna do? I say that regularly.
Well, but then, okay. But reality is Bill had the other, which is like, you also have to admit to yourself when you just start need to be making, you know, your exit plans.
Yeah, totally.
You know, if I can't take this, you know, if this is too costly to my family's health, to my emotional health, my sense of spiritual integrity, what would be next? What's my escape route? Escape routes help us. When we know we have an escape route, it's easier not to feel panicked in situations.
Yes.
And to make our best choices.
Yes, absolutely. And to lean into a change with peace. Being able to breathe, process, pray. Yeah. Oh, it's so good. Well, to that end, Bill, I'm wondering if you would pray for those leaders who may be discovering, oh boy, I'm the one who needs help, or those who are in situations where they're going, oh, this is unhealthy and I just don't know what to do. Would you mind praying for our leaders?
You bet.
Thank you.
God, thanks for this conversation. You really deeply care about how we hold power, how we create culture in our on our church staffs. And we just pray for your mercy. God, I pray your blessing on the leaders who just now are realizing it's me. I'm the a-hole in the room. I pray that you give them courage to press into that, to name what's really going on, and to start on a journey towards holding power more like Jesus. Mm-hmm. And we pray for our friends who are struggling, who are on, particularly those who are on church staffs, who are starting to realize that this is not what I thought it was going to be, that this is really unhealthy. There's a lot of control or manipulation or guilt or overworking. Holy Spirit, would you fill them with clarity around a next step, around a safe person outside of their system with the necessary support? And would you help them start working on how to appropriately use their agency and appropriately plan for what's next? Bless our churches. Bless your church to become more like Christ. In his name we pray. Amen.
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 Bill and Brenna, what a treat to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thanks for inviting us. This was delightful.